3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
It's Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. I'm Bruce Van Dyke. We get a chance to talk with Joe Tate about things throughout his play-by-play career. And today, Joe, we are going to talk about the Cleveland Rockers. That's the WNBA team that the Cavaliers, this was what, 97 from my notes here. Started in 1997. Well, the NBA wanted to, bring women's basketball? Just try to find another thing to do in the off season. What do you remember about the?
I think the mover and shaker was the commissioner who did a lot of things to expand the NBA and professional basketball. You know, the G League and the WNBA and overseas games, and we took exhibition ball down to Mexico and so on and so forth. Yeah, he was the mover and shaker. They felt the time had come. And so Gordon Gund ponied up the cash to put a women's basketball team into Gund Arena in the summertime.
When did the season start? I mean, we're talking about June, July, August?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yeah, after it happened about the time the NBA championship was, you know, it was going on while the NBA championship was being finalized, and then continued on and was usually done by Labor Day.
About how many games did they play in a season?
They played a 30-game schedule.
And what is it, two a week maybe? How does that pace out throughout the season?
Yeah, probably two a week, three a week. In the Olympic years, the women, of course, most of them played either for the U.S. or for their own native countries, and so there was about a two-week hiatus in there, maybe a little longer than that, whereby those gals went and played for their respective teams, then they got back and finished up the regular season.
Let's talk about your role then, I guess, with the Cleveland Rockers. Did they just come to you and say, Joe, you're our play-by-play for the Cavaliers. Here's what we'd like you to do during the time you thought you were going to have off in the summertime.
Well, that was just about it.
Okay.
I really am glad, and I mean this sincerely, Bruce, that I had the opportunity to spend the six or seven seasons that the Rockers were in existence, because, A, the women played with a reckless abandon and a determination that many nights in the NBA you did not see from players who were being given much, much more money to play their game of basketball. I thought the women were totally dedicated to what they were doing, and they came from all over the world, had a chance to meet some ladies who, you know, I never would have met, and got to know a little bit about their countries. One that sticks in my mind is Eva Nemkova. She was from the Czech Republic, and Penny Taylor was from Australia. Janice Braxton, who is my favorite. If they say, who are your favorite basketball players of all time, I would put Janice Braxton into my top five along with four guys, because Janice Braxton played as tough a brand of basketball as I ever saw anybody play. In fact, there was a gal playing for the L.A. Sparks, Lisa Leslie, who was kind of the prima donna of the WNBA. She was in a major market. She was a very beautiful girl, and she could play the game. She was also very tall. She, I believe, is credited with the first dunk in the WNBA, something the women didn't do very much, because they felt, let's make sure the ball goes in the basket rather than trying to grandstand. And Janice Braxton was the kind of a ball player that she, when she went into the ball game, she kind of looked across to see wherever Lisa Leslie was, and about 30 seconds into the game, she gives Lisa a hip check that turns Lisa into a bystander because she wanted nothing to do with Janice Braxton the rest of the time that Janice was out there. And Janice had played all over the world. She told me some great stories about her time in the Soviet Union playing there. And so it was a great education. It was a way to meet a lot of people I never would have met before. Also, they were kind enough to let my wife, Jean, go with the team on some of the road trips, and she loved it. She loved women's basketball. There's was a particular player, Vicky Fox, that she just thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I remember when Vicky was finally let go by the Rockers, I was able to give Vicky a teddy bear that my wife bought for her as kind of a going away gift. So there was I didn't see her giving LeBron James a going away gift or anything like that. There was just a camaraderie that I remember very, very fondly. I enjoyed every bit of my years with the WNBA. And Dan Hughes, who, of course, is an Ohioan, and he was the coach who really did good things for basketball in all of the franchises that he coached after the Rockers bit the dust. Unfortunately, all of this feeling I have for the Rockers and for the WNBA, totally positive, it did not go to the general public to the point where people were coming down in great numbers to watch the team play. And I remember Gordon, when he decided to end the Cleveland Rockers Association and the WNBA, he called me and said, I know this is going to really hurt you because you enjoy the Rockers so much, but he says, I'm going to have to end our association with the WNBA because I'm losing between $1.5 million and $2 million on the Rockers each season, and it's a short season, so it doesn't take as long to lose $2 million with the girls as it did with the guys. So that in a nutshell is the Rockers, but you will not hear me say anything negative about the Cleveland Rockers. Just as fine a group of people as I'd ever run into in my life. I would put them right in there with that great Cavalier basketball team of Doherty, Nance, Price, Elo, Sanders, that bunch, who were just tremendous human beings, along with their coach, Lenny Wilkins. And I would put the Rockers, personality and intelligence-wise, right in there with them. That's the kind of gals they were.
Talking with Joe Tate over the timeline about the Cleveland Rockers, his time calling that for the WNBA. The Cavaliers created the Cleveland Rockers. They had the same, I guess, similar colored scheme. This was the blue and orange years of the Cavs, I believe, and it was a similar color scheme, and they had kind of the rock guitar for their logo. Have you ever, prior to this, covered or any kind of women's sports in your career?
Yes, I'd been doing high school women's basketball for some of the network affiliates that carried the Cavaliers. I would find myself on a Friday night when the Cavs weren't playing, saying going down to Dover, New Philadelphia. That was one of my favorite spots because Dover and New Philadelphia, when it comes to sports, there might as well be a 20-foot wall between the two communities. There's great athletic pride, and when the two girls' teams got together down in Dover, New Philadelphia, it was a battle. Those two teams really went at each other tooth and nail, and I did several of their games over the years, and I loved it. I just enjoyed watching them play. It wasn't the most picturesque basketball you'll ever see, but it was done with a fervor that you won't see in a lot of basketball games.
Is there a different way that you call the game or approach it because of gender?
No, none whatsoever. You call it the same way. The women's game, in high school anyway, didn't move as fast as the guys at that time. And I think since that time, and I've sat in with Tim Alcorn on some girls' basketball since that time, I think the tempo and actually the quality of play has improved over the last few years in women's high school basketball. In the pros, I used to say, where else in the world are you ever going to see a fast break where all five players touch the ball on the way to the basket? That was one of the things about the women's game. They knew how to pass the basketball. They also knew it didn't make any difference who finally put the ball in the basket. As long as it was one of their people putting it into their basket, it was just fine. And so there was a team aspect to the way they played the game that sometimes didn't show up with the guys.
So you've got the Rockers. They went from 1997 to 2003. Their best year, I guess it says here, was 2001, where they actually won the Eastern Conference and had the number one seed. Was there any momentum built? Do you remember anything about that particular season or anything like that related to maybe their best year as a team?
They were a good bunch. They played hard, but they certainly were not the best talent in terms of teams in the WNBA. There were some pretty darn good women's basketball teams playing in the league at that time. So, that's as far as they got in terms of up the ladder, but they never did have that last person that could carry them up to the championship level. They didn't have a female version of LeBron to push them over the top and maybe draw some people, which, of course, was the biggest problem they had, was just getting people to come down to Gund Arena and see the games. They blocked out the upper level of the Gund Arena behind curtains so that you actually only had the lower bowl that was ever occupied by anybody during the women's game.
Talking with Joe Tate over the timeline, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake, and we'll have more in just a moment.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Talking with Joe Tate over the timeline about the Cleveland Rockers, his time calling that for the WNBA during those months after the Cavaliers. Did you have any break in between? Was there any kind of like a time for you to settle into this second season, per se?
If there was, it was relatively brief downtime. My wife at the time was training horses out at Thistledown, so when I dropped the microphone, I picked up the pitchfork and, worked with her out at the racetrack. So, I kept things going, and she kept me going too. So, and she loved the Rockers. That was one of the funniest things, and I got to get this story in because I've told it many times, and it is my wife, in addition to being a very capable horse trainer, also was a gambler. She loved to gamble, and one trip she always made sure she went was to the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, where the Connecticut Sun played their games, because it was a casino and a nice, beautiful hotel. So on the first trip that she made with the Rockers to the Mohegan Sun, some of the girls knew that Jeannie had been to Atlantic City and Vegas and Tahoe and those places. So they wanted to know, what's the secret to being a successful gambler. So it was decided that, and this is one thing about the women's team, you know, we ate meals together. If there was a buffet, the team was in line at the buffet, and there was a good one at the Mohegan Sun. And so it was decided that when the buffet was done, they would follow Jeannie to a slot machine, and she would explain to them the procedures that she felt were necessary for them to become good gamblers. And she drew a full crowd, and I'm sitting there next to her, and she starts in, and she says, "Now, ladies, the first thing you have to realize, you got to be into this for at least $1,000 before things start to happen." And I turned around to see the reaction of the team when they heard that. It was the fastest fast break probably in the history of the Rockers, because there was nobody there. They heard $1,000 and they took off like shots, and we didn't see them the rest of the time. So Jeannie scared them all away with her version of what you had to do to be a gambler.
Well, but the paychecks for the Rockers, the WNBA women's basketball, it's at a different level than that of, obviously the NBA.
Yes, and the per diem, everything was scaled down.
What was similar about that? Were there the same types of players, those that sort of kept alone, those that got along, you know, different personalities,
sure,
that type of thing as well?
Oh, yeah. There were people that didn't like each other. But there was less of that, I think, because the girls who were playing in the WNBA really wanted the league to succeed. And so some of the personal pettiness was kind of put aside so they could get the job done. And we had a homogeneous group with the Rockers, especially with Dan Hughes, who did the coaching with them until the team was disbanded. They were very, very into trying to win and go as far as they possibly could.
Did you ever attend any of the practices or see them, you know, prior to game time or outside of that as well?
Yeah, I'd go to practice on occasion, sure. Especially in some of the towns, there was nothing else to do except go to practice and watch them practice. But no, it was just a good group of people. I have a very, very warm spot in my memory for my years with the Rockers. I have always been proud to say I broadcast every game the Rockers ever played, and that I consider to be a real plus as far as my career is concerned.
Did they know who you were? Did they know about you? Did they listen to those games? Did they have sort of a sense of sort of the NBA umbrella over this whole WNBA game?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they knew I did the Cavaliers. I don't remember that it cut a lot of ice as far as they were concerned, because people who were playing for the Rockers anyway were working very, very hard to make the team win and make the league work. So, no, I don't think that the fact that I did the Cavaliers had much of a bearing on anything that the Rockers did. I got along with them all, and I still maintain a correspondence with Dan Hughes, the coach. I still correspond with Georgia Fisher, who was the trainer for the Rockers. We've had a couple of get-togethers even when girls who had played for the Rockers were playing for other teams in the WNBA. Remember, the Cavaliers were down in San Antonio and to play the Spurs, and the Chicago Sky were coming in to play the San Antonio Silver Stars in the WNBA, and there were several players from the Rockers days who were playing for Chicago, and they came, and along with Amanda Petrek, who was the Cavalier PR director, she was also in charge of things for the rockers in that department. And we all got together down on the Riverwalk and had a little get-together and told a lot of stories. And it was good to see them all again. I think that was probably about the last time I've seen any of them, with the exception of Coach Hughes.
Calling the games, do you remember any particular moments in games or things that happened that, were just kind of a interesting basketball situation?
Well, evidently it wasn't that interesting for the people who were out there. For one thing, we weren't on the big 50,000 water for the girls' game, and so the signal wasn't as pronounced as it was for the guys, but... No, I can't think of anything in particular. The one thing I remember is Janice Braxton looking for Lisa Leslie and knocking her about three rows up into the seats to make sure
kind of
she realized.
What kind of promotions did they have for games like this to sort of entice the audience or to be a part of that? Do you remember?
They had T-shirt giveaways, and I don't know that we ever got around to bobbleheads, but... I mean, they were losing a lot of money. That was one of the things. So they didn't spend any more than they had to keep things going. It was the time had not come for women's basketball at the professional level in Cleveland. Maybe someday it'll come back. I hope so. But it wasn't the right time. And the fact that Mr. Gund was strong enough to keep going for that span, I appreciated it, and I know the girls appreciated it as well.
Joe Tate joining us for Over the Timeline, looking back at many things that he's done through his career, and one of them was calling the Cleveland Rockers for the WNBA from 1997 until 2003. Joe, we appreciate your time again, and we will look forward to our next Over the Timeline podcast.
As will I. Bruce, thank you very much.
Brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake.